This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I am your host, Stu Whiffin. I hope you're doing well today. I'm feeling good, just doing some intros and outros that I obviously record after we've recorded the episode. I'm sitting in my little shed type thing at the end of the garden. And today I am doing the intro for my podcast chat with Star Sailor frontman, James Walsh. James, I'd met before a few times. He came out and partied after the last Hardcore Listing live show in London. And he's just a really nice guy. Super calm, very laid back. And it was really nice to chat tunes with him. And I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy listening as much as I did recording it. So, just a quick shout out to everybody on the Distraction Pieces Network. There's loads of other podcasts on this network, which is owned by Pod Diddy himself, Scroobius Pip. So go over and have a little look at the other stuff on the network. And big thanks to 76 for producing this. Brad Acton and My Name Is Ad for doing artwork and video content. I think that's it. So enjoy this episode of Off the Beaten Track podcast with James Walsh. 76, drop the intro.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Right, we're recording. We are in the Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen, where we've recorded many an episode of Hardcore Listing and home of 3 live shows now, and it's my base for today, where I'm going to be recording 4 podcasts today, which will be coming your way in the forthcoming weeks. We're in the live room. It's not too warm. The sun's shining outside, which is nice, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce today's guest, James Walsh.
Hey, you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I last saw you post the last live show. We went a few doors up from here and drank some booze. And, it was a bit of fun.
It was great. It was a good night.
It was. It was a bit of fun, that was. And and obviously you've guested previously on Hardcore Listing.
Yeah.
Top 5 Shane Meadows films.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Meadows and well, not necessarily Meadows, I watched Journeyman, have you seen it yet?
Yeah, the Paddy Considine film.
What did you make of that?
Superb.
Mate, I'm not going to lie, when he makes that phone call to his wife,
yeah,
I was in floods of tears.
Yeah.
It absolutely destroyed me. I thought it was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I thought he clearly learned how to box properly as well.
Yeah.
And I know just through seeing and following him on his social media and stuff, he's a massive boxing enthusiast anyway. And
yeah
I thought it was a cracker.
I believe that particular scene was powerful for him to film as well. because he was talking about it. I was fortunate enough to listen to him speak at the Charlatans North by Northwich thing.
Was he being interviewed by Tim, or was he being interviewed by...
It was for another podcast, for Craig Parkinson's.
Craig Parkinson's. He's was meant to have been doing one today, here, with me. But he's got the kids in the summer, all of these, but he's going to be a future guest, so I've not listened to that one yet.
It's good. But unfortunately, it's not coming out, because I think that's one of the great things about Craig's podcast, your podcast, anyone's podcast, is the integrity of, like, Paddy wasn't particularly happy with stuff that he'd said, and he said, I'd be happier if you didn't put it out. So, like, fair enough.
It's weird you say that. Yeah. The last live show we done here, one of our guests on stage was a podcast called Matt Stocks.
Yeah.
And he recorded one with Paddy, and again, Paddy wasn't comfortable with some of the things he said, so that one's not coming out.
But I don't think he'd mind me kind of repeating this little bit, because it was just about him filming that scene, and it was, he said there's certain times as an actor where you kind of inhabit a character, but there's still a little bit of yourself in there. It's you playing a role. And he said that in that moment he was that guy pleading for his wife to come home, and it's almost like an out-of-body experience, like method acting taken to the extreme. Is like, it takes a long time to get over it, because you're like, I was him. So it was good to hear him talk, and
I'm sure there couldn't be many takes of that.
No.
We've
got it.
Without saying too much, you know, he's just... You know, he's had a brain injury, right? Fighting, and his behaviour becomes quite erratic, and his wife leaves him, and he just makes this phone call to her to try and get her to come home, and he's trying to prolong the call, isn't he? He's trying to think of things to say, and it's mate, it will tear you in half. It's an amazing bit of cinema,
powerful film.
Absolutely brilliant, but. We're not here to talk about Paddy today. We're here to talk about the 7 songs on your playlist, which will be available on Spotify as well. So you can go and listen to the tracks that James chooses throughout the duration of this chat. And we always start the podcast, fittingly so, with the song that has the greatest intro. And so do you want to... You can announce your songs as we go through this. So.
Yeah. I've gone with... I Am the Resurrection, the Stone Roses.
Okay. Why was that?
Well, I think there's loads of songs out there with amazing intros, like Dusty Springfield, Son of a Preacher Man. Yeah. Those songs where you just know instinctively that's that song. But what I think marks out I Am the Resurrection is, because that drum beat is so simple.
Yeah.
For a song to become so iconic that when you hear someone going,
yep.
You go, oh, it's I Am the Resurrection. It's like, to me, that's unbelievable.
And it is just that drum beat, right? Yeah. And then obviously the bass comes in, which is off the scale.
Yeah.
But I think, do you know what's so brilliant is, because the start of it is so stripped and it is just that beat, once you know that song, you know that's the intro to whatever it is, 9 minutes of fucking
madness
that finishes anything but stripped down.
Yeah.
You know, everything gets thrown at that last 4 minutes, right? And I think, I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts on it as a songwriter, but what I love about that record is the fact that you don't get the chorus.
Yeah.
It's like, where's the chorus? Oh, hang on, it's gone back to the second verse. Like, when's the chorus come in? Yeah. And then it just, I guess it's what people get from dance music, maybe. You're just waiting for that drop.
Yeah.
Is there a more euphoric chorus when that drops? And do you think that it's that euphoric because of you're made to wait for it?
Yeah, I think it's it's I think the power of, and because the verse is so strong as well, you don't mind that it goes back to the verse, because it's a good verse. But yeah, it definitely increases the impact that it's you've had to work for it.
Yeah. I mean, when you sit down, you know, and you decide to, I'm going to write a song today, and you start to structure that, do you have a format that you try to work to? Are you verse, chorus, mid, late chorus, or...?
Yeah, I think it varies on what sort of song starts to... Usually I'll start with chords and melody, and then the style of song or the arrangement of the song will start to evolve from that. So then you can go, okay, this is where we're going. But I try and increasingly to put some sort of hook in the verse of most of the songs that I'm writing now, because I think the natural sort of way to write songs and to go through the process is to go, right, we've got to make the chorus really strong and then the verses fit around that. But at the end of the day, the intro and the verse is the first thing you're going to hear.
Of course. So. And in the world we live in now, where everything's moved so fast and is so disposable, and you know, everything is so saturated with music, and you know, it's there, you haven't got to think about it. I guess, I don't know, do people, if they're not Shazamming it in the first minute now, are these things that have to be considered if you're writing for other artists now, just that kind of impact of the intro?
A little bit, yeah. I think I've not been sort of lucky enough yet to write with any massive artists, not recently anyway, where I have to think about that too much.
But what are your thoughts on that? Because I guess if you're creating, and you know, I don't think it's too wanky to say art, like, surely it shouldn't have them boundaries, should it? You should write what you think is how you, you know, want stuff to be perceived, and what's going on in your mind, and you know, and the chord progressions, whatever it is that feels right. Is it weird to think, well, oh yeah, I know, but that intro may be too long that I'm not going to get people, or will it now mean it won't get on radio and things like that? Are these considerations that you particularly, A, adhere to, and B, do they sit comfortably with you?
I don't know. I've not... Yeah. I guess you just have to find the balance, really, between... Like, I do a lot of library music, which, on the face of it, is about as sort of commercial and... what's the word? Homogenised as it gets, but...
For people that aren't so sure as to what library music is as such, do you want to explain maybe a little bit as to...?
Yeah, it's basically music for TV and film that goes up on a big library. So if a TV show can't afford or can't get a big song like a Bob Dylan song or a Neil Young song, they'll type in acoustic singer-songwriter style and pull something down from the library. But I actually really enjoy writing that stuff, because I think whether it's commercial pressure or artistic pressure, like I have to make this my masterpiece, it's kind of, I don't sort of worry about it too much. I just write what comes naturally and quickly as well, and go, right, there you go. And then fortunately, a lot of the stuff has been accepted and has become a route for my creativity. Yeah. So I think that's one of the... It's amazing touring with the band and getting to play these shows and play these old songs for people night after night, but I think as an artist and a songwriter, you need, or me personally, I need somewhere for these ideas and these
of course.
creations to go. So, and people say like, oh, do you not feel like you want to save this for your own album or for Star Sailor? And I feel my kind of reaction to that is, well, wherever, if someone's asked you to do something and you come up with something and it works, then let it go.
Yeah.
And have faith in your own ability to write something great down the line when songs are required for a Star Sailor album or a solo album. Just keep the wheels turning.
Okay. Well, to go back to the Roses quickly, I mean, the age that I am, I was 16 when Resurrection come out, and I kind of caught it at the right time, and it, you know, it was, Stone Roses were the biggest thing on the planet, and you know, everyone went Manchester and stuff like that. You're considerably younger than me, so what was your sort of introduction to the Roses?
I think when Oasis became big, and Blur and Pulp, the Britpop explosion, basically. I think that kind of triggered a lot of working backwards and a lot of raiding like the older brothers or older sisters record collection. And a lot of the clubs, the sort of indie clubs that I would go to in Wigan and Warrington, they'd kind of go back to New Order and the Smiths and the Stone Roses, and which is amazing to think of now.
That they
were the songs that got people on the dance floor.
Well,
because a lot of them, like I Am the Resurrection, is quite upbeat and dancey, but a lot of them are kind of mid-tempo tunes.
Yeah, yeah.
But somehow he found a way to sort of move around to.
You know, I still run my indie night in Essex, and Resurrection is still a point in the night where, and it's amazing, and also to get approached by 18-year-old kids saying, can you play How Soon Is Now? Or can you play, I don't know, Loose Fit? Or, you know, or and I Want to Be Adored. And it's like, these songs aren't necessarily what you would deem, in inverted commas, dance floor bangers, right? But I guess in the indie clubs, I mean, we'll get on to clubbing a little bit later, because obviously I want to talk about your time clubbing. But yeah, I do think it's the indie club is the exception. You can play them songs like that, and you know, I think because people are generally committed to the them bands. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
but all right, well, look, let's start to sort of move through your playlist. So I asked you to choose for your second track the first song that you remember that had an emotional impact on you. So that could be whatever emotion you you know, deem strong enough that it's stuck with you. And and you went for
Design for Life, Manic Street Preachers.
Okay.
I think there were other songs that, or movements that had a kind of had an effect on me. Like I loved Oasis. I still love that music, and The Verve were massive for me, and Blur. But I think to kind of narrow it down to one song, I think, and just one moment where I thought, what on earth is that? That's unbelievable. It was definitely a Design for Life. I think there was a lot of that music as well. It fit together. It like Oasis, the Blue Tones. Not to kind of belittle it in any way, because they've all got their own unique things going on, but they all worked well together, and that's why it worked as a as a scene. Whereas the Manics, I've always felt, were just on a completely different plane. The lyrics they were writing, the James Dean Bradfield's voice,
something else.
And when I heard that song amongst all this perfectly good, and because guitar music was massive at the time, so for a song, a essentially a guitar song to kind of stand out amongst all the rest was like, yeah, I think it was Mark Radcliffe played it on his show.
Yeah.
As in the bathroom, I remember, distinctly
How old
remember.
Was you?
I must have been 16. I distinctly remember being in the bathroom and thinking, how do I get hold of that song? It's amazing.
Well, I mean, to, you know, up until that album, the Manix, you know, had put out music, you know, like Loves for Exile, Slash and Burn, yeah. Despair Aware, and stuff like that. And it was far more gnarly. And, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I think they've always had a really strong pop element. You know, even tracks like Little Baby Nothing, I think, are fantastic pop songs. But then this album, and you know, I'd say definitely this single and the single after, Everything Must Go, was that the single after that?
Yeah.
And in Australia and stuff like that. For me, that was a turning point for that band in regards to definitely for production, because it was quite Spectre-esque, right?
Yeah.
It was huge strings. Mm-hmm. And what do they call them? Big drums. What are they called? Great big things where you... I can't think what they're called. Drums, are they?
It's kettle drums.
It's a kettle drums, yeah. And there's a bit in the in that track, which I personally think is the greatest moment in that song. It's where the strings go... It's just magnificent.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to have a song that big, you've got to have a vocal that can keep up with that.
Yeah.
And yet, as massive as that is, his song still, his voice still fucking dwarfs it.
Yeah.
It's so strong, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
And so, I want to ask you then, hearing that big string-laden production and these big songs, was that, do you think that influenced the fact of Star Sailor and strings and obviously it's a Spectre production and stuff like that? Was... Do you think that that kind of made its dent so strongly emotionally at that point that, you know, it stuck with you to the point where you thought, right, well, I can reference this? And
I think more, probably more subconsciously, and there's definitely a lineage or whatever from, or a connection between James Dean Bradfield and Manic Street Preachers and the music I subsequently obsessed over, like Tim Buckley and Jeff Buckley, that sort of vocal range and emotional depth. So yeah, I can definitely see a connection. I remember I watched the Manix at Isle of Wight Festival.
And recently?
Yeah. And I thought they were easily like the best band of the festival. But it's funny when you're watching something and it's having this like massive emotional impact on you, to the extent where if you see people around who aren't getting it, you're like, what's wrong with you? What are you doing now? How can you just sort of nod your head to this song and think, yeah, that's nice? So that's the power of music, I guess. Like, you become a supporter for your, like football or whatever, become a supporter for your favourite song.
Yeah.
Like, you want to give someone a shake and go, just, no, you're not... Yeah, it's all right. You're not listening to it properly. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
But do you find you do that? Because I definitely do that. If you know, if I've got friends over and I've heard some track that I just think, fuck, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, and I play it to someone, and you know, and maybe they'll start looking at their phone or just you know, chatting to someone else that's in the room. I just think, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, why are you not just knocked sideways by this piece of beauty? And but I guess it is, it's horses for courses, right? It still don't make me feel any better about it, because I just think, no, I'm right, you're wrong. So where was you born?
Chorley in Lancashire.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so growing up, was it a musical household?
Yeah, it was. I think neither of my parents sort of played any instruments around the house or anything.
So there wasn't like a piano in the house or a guitar or anything?
There was a guitar.
Okay.
I remember my dad, as a head teacher. My mum's ironically enough a teacher of deaf children. So, he won a guitar in a raffle, and it just sat on his shelf in his study, like, and no one really touching it. It's a really not the best guitar either, just like a cheap acoustic, nylon string acoustic. I just remember getting into Neil Young and going like, right, I'm going to take that down.
So how did you get into Neil Young? And what age was this then?
My dad used to play Neil Young.
Right.
Harvest Moon album, which I believe was like 92, 93. But I think it was a few years after that. So pretty much alongside the Britpop stuff.
Yeah.
So 95, 96.
So did you have older brothers and sisters or...?
Yeah, I've got a brother who's 8 years older than me, so he was kind of New Order, Stone Roses stuff.
So you got, you know, was it that kind of thing of I used to, you know, nick my older brother's records and used to hear him playing records and stuff like that?
Yeah, he'd be away at university or whatever and I'd sneak in his room and play his CDs sometimes, yeah.
Nice. Okay, well, if we go on to track three, and it is brilliant because, as I've said time and time again on this podcast, I just think it's brilliant when guests come on and leave their call at the door because it's so easy to say that you was at school, you know, listening to The Fall and stuff like that, but nobody was. And so for track three, I asked you to pick the song that reminds me of your school days.
That was Babylon Zoo, Spaceman.
Have you listened to it recently?
No, it's not. It's definitely a song that just triggers those memories of being at school. I remember we had to do it, or we didn't have to do it, but we had to choose a song because part of our GCSE music was that you have to do an ensemble. So I got together with a friend of mine who played bass guitar, and I was singing and playing guitar, and that was the song that we chose to do for our GCSE music ensemble piece.
And did you sing?
Yeah.
Fantastic. And is that recorded anywhere?
I think so, yeah, somewhere.
I would love to hear James Walsh doing his best. Jazzman, was that his name?
That was his name, yeah.
And, I think they sent him up on Brass Eye, didn't they? Can you remember the episode of... was it Brass Eye?
Rings the Bell. He was quite flamboyant.
Yeah.
And he was saying that... Delusional, maybe.
There's definitely a bit of that. And they were saying, like, you know, he was talking about where he's going to take music. And I think it was Chris Morris or someone was saying, like, you know, do you feel restricted by, you know, A to G? And he was like, no. Nah. And he was like, do you think you'll ever play a H? He was like, I think I will. And so, all right, so what sort of memories does that evoke, Spaceman? Do you predominantly just sitting there learning how to play it?
Yeah, just and thinking it was great as well. Like, actually really liking it and...
Because it's from an advert, right?
Yeah.
And it was just the speeded up vocal that I believe was on the advert, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a prime example of, if you're not aware of this song, why you should go over to the Spotify playlist and listen to it, because he looked quite cool, didn't he? You know, he was a pretty guy, and he had a sort of almost a bit Brian Molko-esque kind of look, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then this little skit from the advert becomes so infectious that I think they maybe wrote the song around that. I don't know. I don't really know what the origins of it was, but it was a massive number one, wasn't it?
And yeah, it was everywhere.
And I haven't listened to it for a while, and I'm sure it's probably hasn't aged that well, but...
It just... reminds me of that youthful enthusiasm and that I don't know, I suppose you have a slightly different critical ear. You kind of, you just absorbing all this music, and
yeah.
It's like a brave new world.
Yeah.
The more music you hear, the more cynical you can let yourself become if you're not too careful, because so much, the more music you listen to, you can go, well, that just sounds like that, and that yeah. just sounds like that. Whereas when you're sort of 12, 13...
It's all ahead of you.
It's like, wow, what is this? This yeah. is amazing.
Yeah.
It's great when you have, like, you'll see, like, go out and see young bands and stuff and see the effect that they're having on their audience. It's yeah. like, I remember that.
It's the best part, right?
Yeah.
The years of being in bands when you started to sort of get a bit more serious, where it was like, oh, God, there's a record deal here, or there's, you know, this and that and the other. Don't get me wrong, they're all things that we kind of wanted. But initially, the biggest thing you could ever do is play your local venue to your mates,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that joy.
It's amazing, yeah.
It's the really best, good. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, did you go to school, Wigan?
Chorley.
Sorry, Chorley. Yeah. How was it? Enjoy school?
Not really. No. That's why I suppose the sort of fun moments stick out, because the rest of it was a bit of a grind. I think I was just a typical teenager, though, really. They were the particularly difficult years because...
Was you at the school that your dad...
No.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was... Well, I was ridiculously sensitive, and that combined with a teenage ego was
a
lethal combination.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of constant juxtaposition, which I guess anyone who's in a band, or particularly singers from bands, you're always on that tightrope between... I'm amazing, why doesn't everyone like me, to pointless, why would anyone like me?
Yeah.
Sort of like, there's no balance of
yeah.
Just chill out and find your people. It's sort of like,
so when you say to talk about finding people back in them days, was there a connection to people at school? Did was there the gang of kids that were into Oasis and Blur,
yeah.
and did you sort of gravitate towards that? And
only towards the end of school, really. I think music, football was a much bigger draw, really, like being good at football, being into football. And music...
And was you good at football?
Never, no. music wasn't particularly talked about or seen as much of a badge of honour, so that's why it was such an eye-opener when I got to college, and there's all these like-minded people, and being able to play guitar and being able to sing and know all these songs was an asset.
I think it's... I was talking to my daughter about college a while ago, and, you know, thankfully she's happy at school, and I was saying, like, but when you get to college, I hope it's the same as it was when I was there, but you get to explore things that you can't really get away with at school without being ridiculed. Like I say, I remember sitting in the common room at college, like, with an acoustic guitar, like, playing it. And, you know, if I'd done that at a canteen at school, I was like, what's he doing? Do you know what I mean? But at college,
exactly.
It's like, you know, you can gravitate towards the people in the, you know, that study art and music. And you know, if you're that way inclined, then I guess you find comrades there, because they're into the same things as you, and they're experimenting in all manner of things creatively as well, that a draw. Did you find that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think at school everyone's trying to find themselves, and you sort of want to do everything you can to fit in. You want to sort of become this person that fits in and is accepted. Whereas as you get older, and certainly when you go to college, it's like you get more confident in, like, no, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is who I am. This is what I'm about. And if people relate to that, great, and if they don't, then I'll just carry on on my own.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. And, if people don't understand me and my love for Babylon Zoo, fuck them. Oh, dear.
I know I had to keep that secret when I went to college.
All right, mate. Well, look, for track four, I said that the asked you to choose the first record that you remember buying. And you've given us a bit of a loaded answer here, so we can discuss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Both parts of your answer here, because I'm quite interested in your cassette singles. So you've said that the first actual record you bought was Park Life.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that first then. So was it, being a northern lad, like, surely by that point you should have been buying Definitely Maybe and.
I think Park Life came out a little bit before.
Did it?
Definitely Maybe. Yeah, from what I remember. When I got it on cassette, it must have been the early days of getting albums from supermarkets. Yeah. So I remember my mum, I gave my mum my pocket money and said, I want to get this Park Life album on cassette. It's just that album had a big impact on me and kind of set me off the path of perusing the bargain bin and actually having a focus to my music and my musical tastes.
So I think it's well documented that Park Life's it's a classic, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got some... Is it your favourite Blur album?
That's a good question. I think... Yeah, I'd say, yeah.
It is.
I think 13 is a great record. But as a work of art, and I suppose 13 is a kind of stick your headphones in and get carried off into another world, whereas you could put Park Life on in a party or you could listen to it on your own.
I think it's... For me, Leisure, I think it's good, but I think Leisure, they wanted that baggy sound and they wanted to kind of get, you know, and then I think, for me, my favourite's Modern Life. And I think Modern Life's the angry album and, you know, let's make some noise. And to have that look that they had at that time when everyone's wearing shorts with long hair and lumberjack shirts to go, fuck that, I'm wearing a Fred Perry and DMs and, you know, I'm going to sing about London was incredible, and you know, on paper, you know, sure, the record company must have been thinking, well, that's not going to work. You know, everyone's listening to Pearl Jam. But, and then I think Park Life was probably that moment. Because for me, Great Escape's brilliant, but it's super pop in places, isn't it? And yeah. I think Park Life's just that journey to that point of having that bit of anger and stamping themselves on the map as this is what we are, but really embracing that pop sensibilities as well. I think yeah. Park Life is that.
Definitely.
That moment. So let's talk about some of your cassette singles that you pulled out your bargain bin.
Oh, there's all sorts. The Pasadena's, I'm doing fine now. That immediately springs to mind.
What Dave Stewart one was it?
I can't remember, honestly.
Was it Dave Stewart and the Spiritual Cowboys?
Exactly.
Was it Jack Talking?
I think, yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
They all kind of blur into each other because it's just like, just picking them out. And I did enjoy the music that was on them as well. Yeah. It's just, there's, like I say, there was no focus to it. It's just like, I think it was like, some, like 6 for a 5 or whatever, or maybe even less.
But that's representative of a thirst for music, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, right, well, look, I'm going to have this
that's
and I'm going to
spend my pocket money on.
Yeah. Like, that's fantastic. So was there like a record shop in Chorley, or was it like you went to Woolworths and just got them in there, or was there like as you started to sort of develop your taste, was there that independent record store? And
there's two record shops in Chorley. Malcolm's Music Land was the big one, and Townsend Records. And Malcolm's Music Land was probably the more kind of personable place, because Malcolm was the guy who ran it.
Figures.
Yeah, I think he's still alive.
Is this either of them shops still there?
Yeah, Malcolm's is definitely still
really?
There.
Really?
I think, I think he's still alive, although he seemed old when I was growing up. So if he is, then he's doing well. He must be into his like 80s or whatever.
Yeah.
But what was unique about that shop was it was, you know, these shops where they sell two completely disparate items where you're like, how did that happen?
An example being?
Malcolm's Music Land and Malcolm's Pram Land.
Oh, fuck off, really?
Yeah.
Prams?
Pram Land, yeah. So I think he let his wife, whatever, have a showroom upstairs where she sold prams.
Couldn't she have had like Maureen's Pram Land or something like that?
No, I don't. So it was a good place. And then just surreal to kind of go through that. And then years later, have our albums in Malcolm's Music Land. And
fantastic.
Like chatting to the local reps or whatever from the label going, I was just in Malcolm's sort of dropping off a load of vinyl copies of Fever or whatever because they've ran out, and you're like, this is ridiculous. Like you say, even more magical than sort of maybe playing a stadium with U2 or whatever, that thing of walking in a record shop when you're a kid and then seeing your own record in there. So
yeah,
it's great.
And you could buy a pram as well.
Yeah, you could pram load of cassette singles.
So in was there like live venues in Chorley that kind of was there like the sort of your token sort of, let's call it a toilet circuit kind of venue where you'd get all the kind of breaking bands like coming through?
Yeah, a little bit. Although we kind of going to college in sort of Wigan and Lee, we'd play more of the venues around there. But my first sort of experience of playing live in front of an audience, apart from like school plays and church or whatever, was I used to wash up at this Italian restaurant, and they'd let me on a Tuesday night they'd have a guy who'd come and play acoustic to a backing track, and they'd let me go up afterwards, usually when everyone, like all the normal customers had left. So there'd be a few locals who were allowed to stay for a lock-in, and I'd get up and play a few songs. So that was...
Can you remember what you play?
It was like Oasis, Neil Young, all the music I was listening to.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Yeah. But was you already at that point though, like, were people already saying to you, mate, you got some serious vocals there? Like, or was you aware that you knew you could sing well? And you met, sorry, I don't want to bombard you with questions, but you also said church as well. So
yeah.
was that part of like your vocal upbringing? And
I think I was. I had the confidence to get up and sing anyway. And there were a few people who said, like, yeah, you. I mean, there was a chef who used to work there, and he'd always say, like, when you're famous, I expect you to give me a backstage pass, in this sort of broad Blackburn accent. But church was good as well, like, because I'm not religious in any way, really. I'm not a sort of fist-pumping atheist either. I'm kind of each to their own.
Yeah, of course.
But what was good about that was that, whereas school or whatever, it's kind of frowned upon and everyone's trying to be cool. It's like, that was one place you could sort of sing at the top of your lungs, really.
Yeah.
And a place where they recognised my talent as well and put me in the choir, and no one could sort of give you shit because everyone else was either in the choir themselves or a middle-aged woman. So get on with it and sing away, and it's great.
Okay. So we're going to move on now from school, and I want to sort of focus now for a little bit on that point, I guess, when you're, well, maybe not quite 18, you know, everyone likes to sneak in a bit early, but the song that soundtracked your clubbing years, and from your song choice, I imagine them clubbing years were in the local indie clubs.
Yeah.
And so what have you gone for?
My weakness is none of your business. I always get that the wrong way around, but yeah, Embrace.
Okay. Why that song?
Because I think we sort of touched on it before, where it's just not a song, certainly not nowadays, that you'd ever imagine playing in a club to kind of...
It's the same as Resurrection with a Chorus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To fill the dance floor. But what I remember distinctly about going to those clubs, that there was a place called The World in Warrington, which was a big place and was full every sort of Friday night. But what I remember distinctly was there wasn't a lot of dancing going on. It was just a hundred little Liam Gallagher, Damon Albarn, Danny McNamara clones kind of skulking around and sort of popping around, so basically impersonating them.
Yeah.
And I was, I guess, to a certain degree, I was one of them. And singing along, there's a lot of singing along. That's what happens now, is the Smiths songs and stuff, when they're still played, is people are just like moving slightly and singing.
I got a lot of time for that first Embrace album.
Yeah.
I wasn't particularly fond of the second album. I thought, like, when I first heard Hooligan, I was like, oh, I'm not feeling this. And Save Me, I thought, was good. But that first album, that, for me, I like the fact that I don't think Danny McNamara's got the strongest voice, but I think his voice works perfectly with what they do.
Yeah.
And I just love the strings on the album. I think it sounds big, doesn't it? And I remember seeing them on, because I think they put their first single out, Fierce Panda. Was it Fierce Panda? Or one of them little indies that all the indie bands at that point were putting a single out on before they sort of signed to a major. Yeah. And I think that track might have been Fireworks. And then I heard Dry Kids.
Yeah.
Fuck me. What a song.
It's a good tune.
And I was like, they were one of them bands, like Oasis, that their B-sides were fucking killer.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, this they've got some output here, and everything's solid. And personally, the album, Retread. Oh, yeah. That, again, like Resurrection, it saves it to the end. And then they throw everything at it. The strings couldn't get any bigger, they'd explode. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's one of them bands that I ended up once going up to Manchester. He owned a club at one point. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I played at the club.
What was it called?
Moho.
Moho.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still there. But I went up there to meet him once. I was doing a Club XFM down here, and I wanted to take it to Manchester. And I went up there to meet him. And it was quite strange. He come to meet me with two security guards, which I thought was quite strange. and sort of, it took him a while to kind of relax, and he was quite like, what are you doing here? And I was like, you invited me here, and it was a really strange thing. And I thought, I'm just going to cut to the chase and just go, look, everything else about why I'm here pales into insignificance here, mate, because I just want to say that first record fucking knocked me sideways.
Yeah.
And that's probably not the coolest way to start what potentially was a business meeting, but yeah. I just thought, look, I'm not here to try and nick a pound note off you. I'm here, predominantly because I just want to go, thanks for fucking Retread, because it blew my fucking mind. And then once we got chatting music, and, he was lovely, but it was quite a strange sort of thing at first. And I thought, oh, do you know what? Fuck the meeting. Let me just tell him that I really like his fucking band. And he was cracking after that. But I don't even know if the club's still there. I've not seen it or
The building's there, but I think it's been through all kinds of different managements and guises or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've subsequently done loads of gigs and hung out with Embrace, and Richard did our last album. He produced our last album.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was quite surreal.
Yeah. Because that's Danny's brother, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the one when I remember seeing the video to Hooligan. I think he had dreadlocks. And I remember thinking, oh, what's happened? I don't know what's going on. But yeah. But then they done the track. What was the one that Chris Martin wrote?
Gravity.
Oh, that's a good tune.
Yeah.
That was a cracker, that was. And I remember seeing them at V. And they I guess they'd come back together. This was probably fucking hell, I reckon maybe 9-10 years ago. And it was their first gig back around this way anyway, and I remember them, and me and my mate, that, because when we was in a band, that band was like what we was trying to sound like. We wanted that epic string arrangement, and it was all acoustic driven. And I said to my mate, Embrace are playing V, let's go to V and watch Embrace. And it was lovely. All my old band all met up for the first time in years to go and watch Embrace come out and play so many of them songs, and it was absolutely magical. So going back to clubbing and moving away from me indulging in my love of Embrace, did you ever do that kind of mainstream tanny clubbing? Did you ever sort of put on your school trousers and a shirt and go and do like a Thursday night in the local cheesy club where, you know, there might be some pretty girls to go and talk to?
I'm trying to think. Not really. You'd sort of desperate times call for desperate measures. Yeah. Like if that's the only place that's open, then you'd end up somewhere like that, especially in Chorley. Yeah. On the rare occasions that, because the world was in Warrington near the rest of the band and college and stuff. But the rare occasion where I'd go out in Chorley, there only was one option, which was Applejack's nightclub.
What a name.
And that was definitely like school trousers and neatly ironed shirt. And ironically, when they're trying to keep trouble out, it's like the uniform of the lout and the hooligans.
So, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to avoid trouble in a place, like, make shorts and t-shirt the dress code.
Absolutely.
You keep all the arseholes out.
Completely. Completely. So at that point, when you were out clubbing, you said that the band and that was in Warrington. So had Star Sailor started to be, you know, was you writing and...
Yeah, we met when I went to college when I was 16. So yeah, that was those sort of, what would it be, 3 or 4 years before we got signed, where that was they were my clubbing years. But.
So was you finding that, I mean, let's have it right, James, without sort of blowing too much smoke up your arse, you would have been the handsome guy from that band, you know, before the record deal. Surely you must have been the guy, you know, that had a voice of an angel, was fronting a band and had a pretty face. I mean, that's a decent thing to go clubbing with, right? Yeah,
not quite. Like, because I suppose Warrington, it's not the biggest place, but it's big enough that there's all kinds of different scenes and things going on, where it wasn't like I could walk into a club and all the girls were flocking. But yeah, there's a few people sort of knew about us and knew what we were doing. Yeah, it took a while before that door opened for me. that's a whole other podcast.
All right, so for track six, I asked you to pick a favourite song from your hometown.
Come On, The Verve is the one, definitely.
So just geographically, Wigan, is it all in the, I don't really know how far these places are from each other. And
yes, I suppose it's cheating slightly, because that's obviously a big Wigan song, and Chorley's like 6 miles down the road.
Oh, you can have that.
So yeah.
I live in Grays, but I've dined out on Depeche Mode in Basildon forever, and that's 10 miles.
And I remember watching The Verve at Hay Hall.
Did you, what, on telly, or you went to
I went to it, yeah. And
that's a serious gig, right?
It was amazing. And I'm sure it was towards the end of Come On where Richard Ashcroft starts chanting, "Thank you for letting me be myself, Wigan." Like, yes.
It's the key change with what a track. Am I right in saying, does Liam sing on the recorded version? Is that him screaming at the end? Or did I?
Yeah, yeah. I think that rings a bell. And it's still the song, like, if I'm feeling down, or if I feel sort of hard done by, I'll stick it on and feel a bit better.
Yeah. That's a powerful track,
it's
right?
It's so defiant at the end when he said, "This is a big fuck you." This is a big fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't help but think of anyone that's ever sort of put you down or, like rejected you in some way. You kind of, yes. And to see them perform it at Hay Hall was amazing. And it is kind of There's that sort of local pride that
yeah,
someone with that kind of talent and swagger and
Was that the first time you'd seen them?
Yeah.
I was talking on a podcast earlier today, and the Verve come up in conversation. I see them support Smashing Pumpkins when he was called Mad Richard and No Shoes and Socks and fucking hell. I mean, if you ever listen to the Glastonbury recording, The Gravity Grave? Oh, fucking hell. It's outrageous. And I think I never got to that Haykel show, but me and all of my mates had that on DVD and just rinsed it. Because it's just, I don't think you're ever going to see the Verve better than that. I think like that was just, it all come together. That's their Spike Island, right? You know, that's their Nebworth. It was absolutely phenomenal. And at that point, probably one of the coolest guys on the planet, Richard Ashcroft. So just to sort of mention while we're here, because you've recently been doing shows with Liam Gallagher. Let's talk about that quickly. How's that been?
Well, it was just a one-off in Istanbul, this night festival, I guess, called the Blue Night Festival. He was headlining. We were on just before him.
This was Star Sailor?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's amazing to kind of get up and do our thing and then get to watch Liam come on after and play all these songs that I kind of grown up with. And it's weird. Obviously, like, it's sort of well publicised that we had a bit of a spat with his brother kind of years and years ago. But it's great that, like, now we kind of shake hands. And I only saw him briefly in the hotel lobby. And we're lucky that we've met some amazing people over the years. And I love Tim Burgess. I grew up with his music as well. And The Charlatans are one of my favourite band. But I've met him enough times now where it's got to that point where I don't get that sort of tingle anymore. I'm kind of, oh, it's Tim, it's my mate. He's amazing, but he's my mate. And the lads from Embrace as well. Whereas Liam is still like...
Force of nature.
All right, Liam. You've got 2 minutes to say something to Liam, I think. All we said to each other was, where have you come from? Oh, we've been in Korea. What was that like? Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's like, we've just been to Budapest. But what I found interesting was, he said, we've not been to Budapest before. It was amazing. And that, for me, that was like, he's drawn a line between Oasis and what he's doing now.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which is fair play. Like, he obviously... He's living in the now and he's sort of not reclaimed those songs, but feels comfortable playing them with his new band and sort of breathing new life into them. Because my first instinct was, of course you've been to Budapest, like Oasis went everywhere. But yeah, like I say, he's in a new place now and he's...
I think it's really interesting hearing him, you know, I've watched a few interviews with him on YouTube that he's done recently, and I'm really enjoying listening to him chat. You know,
he seems really comfortable in it.
Yeah,
himself, and
he just seems like he's loving it.
Yeah, his brother Paul was on the road as well, and he was nice as well, and it just seems like he's kind of at one with. he's always been this sort of force of nature,
It's weird you mention Paul Gallagher. That's one of my favourite quotes from him ever.
I suppose it's hard to talk about Liam Gallagher because you think, if for some mad reason he ever listens to it, what's he going to think? I'm trying to think how to word this. It's like he's obviously, like I say, he's still a force of nature. He's still got an edge, but he's maybe lost a bit of that nastiness, that kind of me against the world thing. He's like, I think he's not in competition with anyone anymore.
Yeah.
He's recognised that there is only one Liam Gallagher.
Yeah.
He's not better or worse than anyone else. Yeah. He's just in this fucking...
Yeah.
What was it Noel said? Or is that he's a spoon in a world of forks or something like that. It's like,
I think it was when Noel said, I'm the greatest songwriter in the world, so I'm always going to write the best fucking songs in the world. Our kid's the best singer in the world, so he's always going to sing the best fucking songs in the world. My brother Paul's a grave digger. He's going to dig the best fucking graves in the world. That was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, but I think Liam's just on his own. He's in Liam Gallagher world. There's only one Liam Gallagher. He's, like I say, he's not better or worse or in competition with anyone else.
Yeah.
He's just doing his thing, which...
he's earned that, right?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's like, and enjoying it. And
Yeah. Fantastic.
Great.
All right, so for your last track, this is an opportunity to introduce listeners to something they may not have heard before. So I ask you to pick a song that you love, that you think a lot of people might not have heard. And so it's your opportunity to...
I think that I've heard loads of amazing music recently. Like I've been rinsing if rinsing's the right expression, or Kane in whatever, the Phoebe Bridgers album. That's really good. But Anais Mitchell is a singer who I'd not come across before. And I stumbled on Bon Iver covering one of her tracks. And he's so good at reinterpreting songs. Like there's some Peter Gabriel stuff he's done, which made me kind of delve into his back catalogue as well.
What era of Gabriel?
He does Talk to Me, mm-hmm. or Come Talk to Me. I'm not sure what year that came out, but Anais Mitchell, he covered her song Coming Down, and I was just absolutely blown away by it, to the extent where I recorded my own version, put a little clip on Instagram, and she messaged me and said, you've done a good job.
Really? Like, yeah. I mean, that's the perfect feedback, right?
Yeah, I got quite emotional because I'm like, obviously being a musician, it's not a sort of regular income. It's not an easy thing to do, and you can feel like you sort of have your down moments. So to get that kind of feedback is like, at the end of the day, that's what we do it for. Recognition from our peers and fellow musicians that you're doing right, you're contributing some decent art to the world and decent performances to the world. So that nice one, thanks Anais.
Okay, so that'd be over on the Spotify playlist, so go and investigate that. And so before we finish, What's happening at the moment, James? What's coming up?
We're going to Denmark in September. Going to South America in October.
Is this you on your own or is this
with Star Sailor?
Yeah.
And November we're doing the Silence Is Easy album.
Really?
People do like 10-year anniversaries, 20-year anniversaries. We've decided to go against the grain and do our 15-year anniversary of Silence Is Easy with a string section.
Fuck, where's that going to be?
Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Nice.
The Ritz in Manchester. And Fruit Market or something it's a new venue in Glasgow anyway. All the dates are up on starsailorband.com, I think it is, the website. But yeah, I'm really excited to do that.
Oh, mate.
I think, I remember when the idea was first kind of mooted. So we can just go and play the Silence Is Easy album. And I remember thinking that's not really unique enough. It's not enough of a draw. I thought it's so kind of string laden anyway. It's like 8 tracks with orchestra on. It's like we've got to do something with that because we've never done it before. And I saw Spiritualized at Barbican recently. They've always got a massive orchestra, and
they play Broken Heart.
But yeah, it's superb.
Oh, fucking hell.
So I'm really excited to do it.
Yeah. What a brilliant way to finish. You know, the fact that so many of these songs we've discussed, the magnificent huge string sounds that have accompanied so many of the records on your playlist, and you've just finished by saying that you're going to play your album with a string section.
Yeah.
That's amazing. James, thanks loads, mate.
Nice
I really appreciate you coming down and doing this.
Cheers.
Wicked. There you go. What a nice little chat. He's super chilled, super laid back, super nice, and clearly super talented. And it's always nice to have music chats with musicians because they're generally as nerdy and as anoraki as me. So thanks ever so much for listening. If you like me chatting to musicians, then have a look in the back catalogue if this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, because I've done episodes with Scroobius Pip, Snowboy, Block Party, and loads more. Go and have a little look. I think that's it. I'm just going to say thank you once more for your ongoing support. Please subscribe, tweet, Insta, Facebook me, whatever. Let us know what you think, and I'll see you next week. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stew with him.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.